We've got Mike Healy, the owner of Skagway Brewing Company in Skagway, Alaska. Mike, how you doing down there?
Pretty good. It finally didn't snow today, so.
Well, that's always good. Yeah. So how are things in Skagway, man? Did you guys dry up and blow away last year with no cruise ships?
It is pretty remarkable how many businesses have survived and how people are doing. It's been pretty wild. 95 to 98% of our economy is cruise ship traffic. And the rest of it is all through the Canadian border. And so that with that being closed, we've been looking at the same people since March of last year.
So you guys, if memory serves, was it just last year? Was it the year before that you had moved into your new digs and expanded and everything?
Yeah. The big expansion was wrapped up at the end of 2019. We operated in the new building in 2019 with, a few corners and tucked away places not quite finished, but we made it work.
So this was not very good timing for you for COVID to come right along when you're ready for your first big season in your new place, right?
Yeah, almost as worse as it could get.
So how have you guys managed to hang on?
Well, we really thought that the Title IV rewrite was going to happen last year, and we were kind of counting on it so that we could start self-distributing our beer. We're, as a brew pub with a beverage dispensary license, we might be the only one in the state with this unique circumstance where we cannot self-distribute. So we were hoping for that. We were planning for it, and that didn't happen. So we didn't really do much on the beer front because it just doesn't pencil out for us. By the time we get a distributor involved, our inputs are really expensive in Skagway, more so even than Anchorage, and our cost of energy is really high. So we didn't do much on the beer front. We came up with a couple of unique IPAs that we knew would be crowd pleasers to keep the approximately 950 people in town happy. And we did more of it on the food front for us, just moved to a curbside pickup and delivery model for most of, well, really up until about a month ago. That's how we've been operating, and gave our kitchen crew some freedom to, really come up with some unique items. And we, did like take and bake stuff and things like that. So that's really what our focus was primarily on food.
Yeah, that's kind of been the only silver lining I've heard from breweries about this whole thing was, well, at least we weren't so busy trying to make a lot of beer for the tourists, so we had more time to experiment and play around. So probably your kitchen had the same.
Yeah, definitely. And we really wanted to experiment more in the brewery, but there, 900 and some people is just not many for for your market. And at, 10 barrel batches, that ends up being just a lot of beer sitting around. So, no, this summer we might do a little bit more experimenting because we got another summer that we're expecting no more cruise ships.
No cruise ships, it looks like. Has the town got any other kind of fallback plans?
This may not sound like much because they just didn't have much to work with. But our tourism department came up with a campaign, tell your friends and family to visit Skagway. And it doesn't sound like much, but with what they had to work with, it's actually pretty good. We have, as part of our operation, we've got, I think we're up to 80 some employee housing bedrooms, and one of those is an old hotel. So we're actually opening up the hotel this year. And hope to actually keep a small portion of it open and into the future. And that's going to kind of help, going to help bring some extra revenue in for us that we normally wouldn't be seeing. Because I do think that we're going to see, maybe an average of 150 people a day in Skagway, which is a little different than the 12,000.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, too, with the border closed, it's kind of difficult to get there. You kind of got to go to Haines and take the ferry, or
fly into Juneau, and then you could take a little puddle jumper or a ferry from Juneau when the ferries are running, of course, which is not been very good lately. So no, you really have to want to get to Skagway in order to make it here.
Well, for the folks who haven't had a chance to visit there, why don't you describe your operation in a little more detail? Because even if it's been, a few years since they were there, you guys have did a big expansion in 2019.
Yeah, so we put in a 10-barrel system that we got from Practical Fusion out of Portland. And you could call it a 3 3/4, I suppose, barrel system. So we're dramatically, we've dramatically increased the size. And along with that, a lot more fermentation space.
I remember what you used to have. So
yeah, amazed, in that little closet.
I'm amazed you could brew in that closet where you had all that equipment crammed in.
It really was amazing how the volume we did out of that.
It was
thing.
A toss up between you and Paul Wheeler and his old place in Haines in the movie set. Who was crammed into the smaller space? I think maybe actually you guys were slightly smaller than him, but
it was pretty close.
Yeah.
So with this 10 barrel system, I'm trying to remember back. We basically a 400% increase in capacity is what we came up with. And we haven't been able to utilize that yet. We're waiting again for that Title IV rewrite to change and obviously people to show up. But I think we will be moving probably to, maybe like a double shift brewing operation for at least probably 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. Once we get back into the swing of things. And that that's one part of our operation in our building. We've got a just over 18,000 square foot building. That's really it's a pretty unique building. One of the control guys who was wiring up all the various controls said, he's like, yeah, you guys are probably one of the more technologically advanced buildings in at least Southeast Alaska. We did a lot with our heating system and cooling to really just, capture every bit of energy that we can and reuse it. So as part of that, we've got an indoor aeroponic garden, which is, it's just been a big experiment. I mean, we call this whole thing the big experiment. And we bought a system, very experimental, and are still tweaking it to this day. But we're producing a pretty good amount of greens that we use on our salads and burgers and whatnot in house, and then we'll sell some to the community. Especially last year, now we don't have the big demand, we're selling a lot to the community. And this summer, we're actually hoping to take this downtime to really expand that garden, because we're really only using a third of it. We've never needed to go any bigger. So yeah, we'll be going pretty big in that, just to kind of see what happens. And then the rest of the building is seating, and someone at one time told me we were the second biggest restaurant in the state as far as indoor seating. I haven't confirmed that, but we're pretty big with indoor and outdoor seating. We've got about 450 seats, so we are ready for lots of cruise ship passengers.
Yeah, you definitely sound like you are. So you mentioned that if the Title IV rewrite, which in its current iteration is Senate Bill 9. If Senate Bill 9 gets approved, you guys want to start self-distributing. What are your plans there? Are you going to be canning?
We really were expecting to start canning, but with the can shortage and a little bit of uncertainty still, we're going to hold off on that. The last article I read made it sound like we still have a couple, I think 2 years almost, of can shortages. Gonna hold off on that. We have a little 4-head bottler that's very, very manual. So we've been doing 22-ounce bottles in the past that we've just been selling out of our own pub here. And we'll probably gear that up a little bit. And kind of, we'll probably just wear that thing out. And once that wears out, then we'll move to canning. And that could be pretty soon, because it's not the most technologically advanced bottler.
Everybody seems to want to move in the direction of cans, and then, of course, with the pandemic, it's really exacerbated the shortages, the combination of more people moving into canning and then more demand for cans because nobody's kegging and everything like that. Everybody does seem to agree that the can is the superior package especially for up here with as many people as want to go hiking and boating and everything like that, having a light non-breakable container makes sense.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, and we really fight and struggle with input costs here. And, you know, the can is just so much cheaper than the bottle.
Right.
Just because of the weight.
Yep. The shipping. So, shipping costs. Yeah, thank you, Jones Act.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are going to do some kegging. We don't really do much right now. See, we've got at least had two other small restaurants, and we would keg off and send over to those two restaurants, paying the distributor as we were doing it, even though, you know, we were doing everything except for filling out a piece of paperwork. And I actually do have to say the distributor worked with us really, really well, understanding that, you know, they weren't really doing much, so their fees were pretty low. So we'll be doing some to those two restaurants, and then we're probably looking at getting into some of the other restaurants in town. That's always been the plan. We wanted to take 2019 and 2020 to really just fine tune things, figure out what our extra capacity is, and then 2021 open it up to, like I said, getting in other establishments around town. So I think we're still going to do that. And I don't foresee us at this time really trying to get into any market outside of Skagway. We are still hopeful that Whitehorse will happen. There's kind of an administrative mess that I may have started of trying to get our beer up there. And last I heard, they said, yeah, it sounds like things are going really good. Everyone seems like it would be a good thing for both of us. But, you know, things move a little slow, so it might take 3, 4, 5 years. So we're kind of hopeful for that. We get our CO2 out of there, so we're driving up there every couple of weeks anyways. So it makes sense to be able to drop beer off.
Yeah. No point in rolling north empty.
Yeah, exactly. So. Though it is, my wife and I usually are the ones who go, and we just actually like to drive and like to get out of town and, you know, do a little shopping at the grocery store and things like that. So if we have to go up empty, we're still going to go.
Well, I wish you every luck this summer, like all of us. Hopefully we'll have something of a tourist season, even if the cruise ships don't come through. And I would encourage all the listeners to consider visiting Skagway. Every time I've gone there, I've had a great time. Anything else you need to tell us, Mike?
Thanks for mentioning Skagway and visiting, because I was going to mention this. If you haven't been to Skagway, this is the summer to do it. It's going to be very mellow, and this is a very beautiful little town with tons of hiking and recreation literally at the town's edge.
Yeah, I always remember the difference in Skagway during the day to after about 6 o'clock in the evening. Skagway turns into a nice quiet little town after the 12,000 people go back onto their tourist ship, and then the evenings in Skagway, it's a nice quiet place, very enjoyable. So this
that it
now
is.
You can have the whole day that way.
You just got to be careful of the tumbleweeds blowing down the street.
That's very true. All righty. Well, hey, thanks again for taking the time to talk to us, Mike, and we wish you every success in 2021, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Bill. Have a good one.
You too. In this month's beer style segment, we're going to talk about one of the most unique and amazing styles of beer out there, the barrel-aged and blended style of Belgian lambic known as Gueuze. That's spelled G-U-E-U-Z-E and is the French name for the style. In Belgium, they speak French in the south and Dutch in the north, but after growing up in New Orleans, my French is considerably better than my Dutch, so we'll stick to Gueuze. But before we start talking about Gueuzes in particular, let's talk about lambics in general. Lambic is a sour wheat beer style brewed in and around Brussels. What makes lambic unique is the utilization of medieval or even more ancient fermentation techniques in its production, rather than the modern microbiological practices developed by Louis Pasteur and Emile Christian Hansen in the late 19th century. Lambics are produced using a complex fermentation based on locally and naturally occurring wild yeast and bacteria, making them the prototype of so-called wild ales now being created by craft brewers all over the world. Within the family of lambics, there are several beer styles, including fruit beers such as Creeks and Framboise, flavored with cherries and raspberries, respectively, and Faro, a lambic that has been sweetened with sugar. But today we are interested in the most complex and highly respected of lambic beer styles, Goose. Goose is an unfruited, sparkling form of lambic that many regard as the epitome of sour beer production. Sometimes called a champagne of Belgium, a Goose is the blend of two or more lambics of different ages, with the younger beer providing the sugars needed for re-fermentation in the bottle. Goose almost certainly predates champagne and was probably originally served directly from the cask, but today it is almost exclusively a bottled beer. Producing the component lambics which are blended to produce a Goose is a time-intensive process. The mash for the beer is produced using 30-40% unmalted wheat. Rather than fresh hops, 3-year-old hops are used. These hops have lost all their flavor and aroma and are used purely for their antimicrobial properties. As I mentioned, rather than adding a particular yeast strain to the wort, lambic brewers simply expose the cooling wort to the air and allow the wild yeast from the area to take hold and ferment the beer. Next, the beer is moved to wooden casks, each of which has its own complex culture of microbes residing within, and allowed to age for 1, 2, or even 3 years. Finally, lambics of different ages are mixed together, bottled, and then allowed to condition. The traditional Goose flavor is dry, sharp, earthy, close to that of an unblended lambic, but with bottle conditioning and the resulting carbonation give it even greater complexity and finesse. Like blending wines or Scotch whiskey, blending lambics of various ages to make a Goose is an art form. Since the base lambics have been spontaneously fermented, each barrel will have a strong individual character. Upon tasting it, the blender will have to decide whether to use the barrel now or hold it further and whether to use it for some other lambic style, such as a fruited beer, or to use it for the brewery's best traditional Goose. Highly aromatic, old, stinky Goose is considered quite valuable and will be used very carefully. These old lambics have barnyard aromatics reminiscent of washed Rhine cheese, which is not surprising given that the same wild yeast and bacteria are at work in both the beer and the cheese. The goal of the blender is to produce a pleasing union of the individual lambics. Young lambics provide fermentable sugars and add bright, vibrant flavors to the blend. Aged lambics lend complexity of flavor along with enzymes created by the dozens of microorganisms resident in the wood of the cask. These enzymes break down complex sugars into simple sugars that yeast and bacteria can consume to produce carbonation. The Goose blender must not only carefully manage the characteristics of taste and acidity of each different lambic, but also make sure that the beer will attain the proper high carbonation desired after bottle conditioning. The proportions of young and old lambic in a Goose differ from year to year and from one brewer to another. Some brewers use approximately 50% one-year-old, 25% two-year-old, and 25% three-year-old lambic. Others prefer two-thirds one-year-old and one-third two- or three-year-old lambic. Special blends may include as little as 10% young beer. After blending, the beer is bottled and laid down in cellars for 4 to 6 months of re-fermentation. Some may not be released for many years. When they are eventually served, the bottles may come to the table in a special basket to maintain the bottle in a horizontal position. This allows the yeast deposits to remain in place while the beer is poured out, sparkling and clear. So how does a fine traditional Goose taste? Well, it's something close to a very dry white wine, but because of the excellent carbonation, it's effervescent and refreshing like the finest champagne. There will be some tartness, and the more traditional the Goose, the greater the degree of tartness. There will also be many interesting so-called barnyard elements, depending on the percentage of truly old lambics used. In short, Gooses taste almost nothing like we would expect a beer to taste. There's no hop flavor or aroma. The beer is bone dry and tart rather than malty. Some people hate them when they first taste them, then grow to love them, while others never do. But whether you love them or hate them, Gooses are a piece of living history and a strong reminder that beer is easily the most complex alcoholic beverage in the world today. If you'd like to taste a Goose, it's obviously not something you can find at a local brewery. However, bottle versions are available at Country Liquors in Kenai or at bottle shops in Anchorage. Don't waste your time looking for this rare beer style at Safeway or Fred Meyer. Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Up next, we've got Clark Pels of Cynosure Brewing in Anchorage. Clark, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming. So how have you been weathering COVID and all the challenges?
We've come through it fine. It hasn't been the easiest period or the least stressful period of my brewing career. But from this perspective, it looks a lot better than it did a year ago. That's for sure. So we had a lot of support from our customers when we were hunkered down, and the municipality of Anchorage waived some of their zoning requirements, which allowed us to have outdoor seating. And that was a kind of amazing how many people were willing to sit out in our luxuriously appointed parking lot. Yeah, so you know, all in all, it's been real. It's gone fine. Taproom sales are kind of back to where they were at the beginning of last year, and of course, the off-premises sales effectively dropped to zero over the last year, but they show signs of coming back. So.
Kind of the one silver lining I've heard anybody brewers say about this whole period has been, well, at least they haven't been so busy trying to pump out beer for the tourists and whatnot, and they've had some more time to do some more experimental one-off kind of stuff. So have you done any of that sort of thing in the last year?
Yes, certainly. Being a lager brewery, having a little bit of extra time is always handy around the brewery, and something you usually can't you can't ship up here if you're short on it. So you know, we have done a couple bocks. We did a My Bock about a year ago, a Helles Bock rather, which did real well for us through the summer months. And we just released a bock beer, sort of just a regular brown bock called Bilbo's Bock, and that was a fun one to do. We've got some customers across the street who own goats, and they would bring the goats over periodically. So I kind of figured if you have goats in the hood, you ought to brew a bock and name it after them. So one of the goats is named Bilbo and got a beer named after it. So,
well, cool.
And yeah, we've been working with our brewer, Cole Tamblin's been doing a great job coming up with interesting beers. We've been doing some more IPAs. We have a what we're calling a sorbet IPA. It's it was brewed in the milkshake style, so with lactose and fruit puree and vanilla, but it's not quite as thick. It's a little bit more refreshing and fruity than most milkshake IPAs.
I'll have to take your word for that one, Clark.
Well, come on up.
Well, no, I mean, milkshake IPA, that's one of those things that's kind of like, that's just a bridge too far for me. I'm sorry. Well, I guess I'm an old guy shaking my cane at the kids and yelling at them to get off my lawn, but you know.
I agree. And that's kind of why I wanted to brew one. It's also why I sort of insisted on brewing it myself and not fobbing it off on Cole. So yeah. I was completely responsible for it, but it turned out well and people like it. Well, it's kettle soured, so that adds a little bit of relief to the
A little balance.
Use Talus hops and Citra hops. And the Talus hops are really nice, as are the Citra, of course. But
yeah. Well, I know they're popular. I see people talking about them and, you know, I read the articles about them. And like I said, it's just, I don't know. I guess I'm getting old. Some of these new styles I scratch my head about. But next time I'm up in Anchorage, I'll have to stop by and I'll try it.
Yeah, well, give it a week or two, yeah. And we'll have our next hazy IPA for you to try too.
I remember when we wanted to try and make our beers clear. Well, that was considered to be something that the brewers strove for.
I tell you what, Bill. When I first sort of heard about hazy IPAs, I was like, "Oh my Goodness, I've spent my entire career trying to get our beers bright and beautiful, and now the kids muck it all up and make a thing out of it. But when you kind of read about the processes and biotransformation and the aromatic molecules in the hops that have sugars attached to them, so there are enzymes in the hops, that in the yeast rather, that remove the sugars from the aromatics and release different aromatics into the beer. It's actually the process kind of makes sense, and it's kind of fun to play around with. Now, you know, at Cynosure, we're about balance. I don't like hazy IPAs that taste like fruit juice. They need to have some bitter, a little bit of bitterness in the backbone.
So what other styles do you have on tap right now?
Right now, geez, we've got the Bock. We have the Sorbet IPA. We have a double IPA. We have a farmhouse beer, a Belgian-style farmhouse, kind of a brown, lower, at least for a Belgian-style, lower ABV beer. We have some of our lagers. We have have a Helles lager, which is a sort of a light, little bit maltier lager, a little bit maltier than a Pilsner. We reserved a couple kegs of our Bavarian-style smoked beer that we call Rauchstar, and that we brewed that about a year ago and sort of cellared them. It's tasting very good, a little bit drier than it was when we put it in. We've got the Bilbo's Bock. On the Belgian side, we have a farmhouse ale, which was brewed with spelt and rye. We have a little bit left of the quadruple Belgian style beer that we brewed for our anniversary back in the fall. We have a double IPA, sort of a West Coast style double IPA. We have our Blackberry Sorbet IPA. We've got a Russian Imperial Stout that Cole worked up and is tasting really good. Intensely roasted flavor, backed up with a, you know, sort of a round chocolatiness. It's very nice. And yeah, so that's what we have available for beers right now. We've been playing around with bottle conditioned beers, and Cole's done a bunch of bottling. And we have a cocoa, cayenne, and kelp version of the Imperial Stout. We sidestreamed some of the Imperial Stout, aged it on cocoa, cayenne-style peppers, and a tiny little bit of kelp. This was a collaboration we did with a local chocolate company. They brew, they make a chocolate bar that uses those ingredients. So we took those ingredients and tried to brew sort of a comparable beer to serve in conjunction with that. And we have bottle conditioned versions of 2019, 2020, our Belgian style holiday beer. And yeah, and have some interesting bottle conditioned beers coming up soon too. We've got a Brett conditioned Saison and a Belgian style Golden Strong that we call Seeing Snakes. And both of those turned out really well.
Both of those sound excellent.
Yeah, they're fun styles to do. And we've got some beer. We've been bringing in some barrels. So we have 3 barrels, I think, right now, and we've run sidestream some of our Belgian beers through the barrels, so we'll be releasing them in the, through the summer.
What kind of hours are y'all open now?
And this is subject to change, and probably will change here soon, but we haven't figured out exactly what we're going to be doing. Tap room is open Wednesday through Sunday. Typically, Wednesday and Thursday we open at 4. Friday and Saturday we open at 3. Sunday, we open at 3, close at 6. The rest of the days, we close at 8 o'clock. Cindy, my wife, who manages the tap room, anticipates increasing the hours here, at least a little bit.
So anything else interesting coming down the pike here in the next month or two?
Apart from that, you know, this time of year, it's kind of, you know, getting our core brands back in stock and getting ready for the tourism season to the extent that we have that one this year. And it would be nice if we had 2 this year.
Yeah.
Certainly from what, you know, what we hear through the grapevine, you know, it looks like independent tourist bookings are coming in pretty strong. So I think that we'll probably have a pretty good season.
I hope so, for all our sakes. Well, hey, Clark, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
And always a pleasure, Bill.
I will make every effort to stop by the next time I'm up that way.
We're on your way out of town, so feel free to give a call or shoot a text anytime, and we'll run you through what we have on tap.
All righty. Hey, you take care and good luck, and hope you have a great summer.
Same to you, Bill. We'll talk soon, I hope. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Here's our closing quote from Richard Cowie Jr., better known by his stage name Wiley, a British rapper, songwriter, and record producer. Wiley said, "Beer may not solve your problems, but neither will water or milk." That's it for this month's show. Until next time, cheers.
Settle for the first, for it might be the worst.